They're common, painfully disabling, and they impair quality of life. According to the World Health Organization, headaches have been underestimated, under-recognized, and under-treated around the world. Less than half of people with migraine or tension headaches seek professional help. Instead, they rely on over-the-counter medications that can, with chronic and excessive use, actually cause headaches. So if you get headaches, then stick around. Go Healthy for Good starts right now. Hello, I'm Dr. Nerida. Welcome to Go Healthy for Good. We've all suffered from a headache at one time or another, but for some people it's an almost daily occurrence, or it's so severe they're unable to function. Headaches triggers are many and varied, from simple dehydration, allergies or stress to more serious conditions that require medical intervention. And just as there are many triggers, so there are also many solutions. Not just painkillers, mind you, but simple lifestyle factors or medical devices that can make a dramatic difference. Meet Pam, a lady whose life was regularly disrupted by migraines.
Yes, when I started having the migraines, and I think I took on, I was on copious drugs and things like that. And when I got a migraine, it was like took 3 days out of my life, you know. So I was in that medical model, you know. So it was sort of like, we got something wrong with you, you just go and you take tablets, you take medication, yeah. Never ever thought to question it. Yeah.
When you're desperate, you don't question it. But today's guest will give us a holistic approach to headaches and will teach you how to treat them cheaply, safely and simply. Plus, there's a yummy treat from the kitchen. But first, the news. In the headlines today, headgear for headaches, exercise good for the head, and nutritional supplement for migraines. Two new medical devices are now available for migraine headaches. A battery-powered headband can be worn for just 20 minutes a day to prevent migraines. It delivers transcutaneous electrical nerve stimulation, or TENS, to the middle of the forehead just above the eyes. A large European study found most users experienced substantial improvement in frequency and severity of migraines. A second device designed to treat migraines is placed at the back of the head, and at the push of a button, a focused magnetic pulse is used to counteract the abnormal hyperactivity associated with migraines. This device is called transcranial magnetic stimulation, or TMS. 35% of users were pain-free within 2 hours, compared with 17% of controls, and only 10% of controls were still pain-free after 24 hours. A recent review of exercise and migraine research showed that exercise prevents migraines. Physical activity enhances neurochemistry, mental outlook, cardiovascular and cerebrovascular fitness. However, intensity, duration, frequency and type of exercise, along with how much warming up you do, are all variables that can help or hinder. So start gently, be sure to stretch before and after exercise, build up slowly and avoid overexertion. And then in the end, you'll be glad you made the effort. Children given a natural supplement reported a significant reduction in frequency, duration and intensity of headaches. Italian researchers at the Centre for Childhood Headache at the University of Naples studied school children affected by neurofibromatosis and migraines. Twice a day for 6 months, the children took a pill containing an extract of ginkgo biloba leaves, coenzyme Q10, vitamin B2 and magnesium. The treatment was found to be both safe and effective, which was in keeping with previous studies involving both children and adults. I'm Dr. Nerida McKibben, and that's today's health news. I want to to introduce you to Dr. Jim Bartley, ear, nose and throat surgeon and pain medicine specialist from Middlemore Hospital in Auckland, New Zealand. Jim was one of my colleagues in New Zealand, and I love his multifaceted approach to headaches. I asked him to share with us how he developed this interest in headaches.
I first became interested in it because when you're an ENT surgeon, you see a lot of people coming to you saying that their sinuses are the cause of their headaches. And initially, many years ago, you'd actually operate on these patients and they'd have normal sinus CT scans with not much evidence of sinus disease, and their headaches wouldn't get any better. And with that, I started looking for other reasons and other causes as to how I could help some of these patients that I was seeing. And it's still very much a popular belief out there that it's my sinuses, doc, and you've got to fix my sinuses up. And unfortunately, that's not always the case.
Okay, now we usually do, though, experience pain in the area where there is something wrong. Is that true of headaches, or is it not true?
The reality is that you don't always experience pain exactly where you think you are. One of the issues is that I started examining my patients around their head and their neck, and quite often when the muscles are tight and sore around the neck and the shoulders, then that can cause a referred pain to many areas of the face. For example, some people come to you saying they've got pain behind their eyes, and if you feel at the junction of the spine and of the skull at the back of the neck, they're often very, very sore there. And so they're getting a referred pain to their sinuses from their neck and shoulder muscles.
Mm. Now, pain is a symptom, isn't it? And often, I know you've written a book about headaches, and you say that it's important to find out if there's emotional stuff going on. Are you saying that people have headaches, it's all in the head? Or is this something that's very important to consider?
Problems with headaches and migraine is that there can be a whole range of potential causes, and sometimes these can be structural. There can be problems within the brain causing the headaches. At other times there can be physiological factors relating to the headaches. And the other issue is that pain and emotions are very much interrelated. So if you've got a headache for a long period of time, you can get very depressed and low because of it. On the other hand, some of the factors that might cause you to be depressed and low might also cause the headache. So it's all very complex.
And when would it be really important to go and see the doctor straight away and not delay about a headache? Are there signs and symptoms that people really need to be aware of?
There are some very obvious ones, and most people will go to their doctor if they've got them. In particular, if all of a sudden they've got a weakness on one side, if they've got a fever, if the headache is extraordinarily bad. But there are some other ones which I think also have to be considered. If you've got a very young child who presents with a headache for the first time, then it's important to seek a further opinion. And the other one that one sees is adults over the 65. If they get headaches for the first time, then it's important to get that more fully evaluated. The ones that I usually pick up are when the person coughs and sneezes, and that makes the headache worse. And that can also be a factor of something important going on inside the brain.
Finger food recipes are always fun, and we've got one for you right after the break. But first, there's this.
I love hamburgers. Want one?
No thanks. I eat a plant-based diet.
Plant-based diet? What's that? I never heard of it.
Otherwise known as vegetarian or vegan.
Oh, so you eat grass and sprouts and tofu and that kind of thing, huh?
Yeah, and I wear a bandana and make peace signs to everyone. Actually, my diet is varied and exciting.
What could be more exciting than dead animals?
Try apples, avocados, apricots, berries, cherries, bananas, cantaloupe, grapes, figs, bejowas, dates, mango. Oh, I love mango. So what do you eat?
Burgers, fries, and Coke.
Anything else?
Pizza and pop as well.
Anything else?
Yeah, a few other things.
And you think my diet's dull and boring?
Well, why didn't you mention sprouts and grass and granola just now?
Because a plant-based diet has so much variety. I just didn't get to that part.
Well, I guess you're right. Besides what you mentioned, you also have amaranth, buckwheat, barley, rice, rye, quinoa, corn, and wheat and millet. You have all kinds of things, don't you?
Not to mention all the nuts, the vegetables, and all the dishes you can make out of them. So what's your favorite grain?
Oh, I don't know. White flour and corn, just like everybody else.
Oh, you poor thing. That's so boring. You should become a vegetarian. Then you can have a really exciting diet.
Oh, I think I will. Thanks. Hey, can I borrow your bandana and make peace signs too?
A vegetarian diet is anything but dull and boring. Just try it. Doctor's orders. Today in Go Healthy's kitchen, we are going to make a dip out of beans. It can be really hard to get beans into children, but this recipe is just really simple, and it's a great way to encourage them to get those legumes. Now, why might we want them to eat legumes? Well, they're full of healthy carbohydrates and proteins without the fat that you might find when you're having a meat dish. And joining me in the kitchen today is Daniel. Daniel, welcome. How old are you?
Six.
6 years old. So you're at school?
Homeschooled.
Homeschooled. Wow. Do you like beans?
Yeah.
You do? Great. Well, the ingredients for this recipe is one can of beans. You can either use black beans, pinto beans, we've got pinto beans here, or kidney beans. So I'm going to tip them in the bowl and blend them up. Then we're going to add later some sour cream and a teaspoon of seasoning mix. So one can of beans, one tablespoon of sour cream, and one teaspoon of seasoning mix. That's easy, isn't it? Right, I'm going to hide this so I don't splatter you all over. You ready? Okay. Okay, we are done. Now you're going to mix it up for me?
Okay.
All right. You want to grab that spoon over there, Daniel?
Okay.
Good. I might borrow it for a minute just to get some of this beanie mix off.
Okay.
There we go. Now, do you want to mix in those things?
Okay.
And I've just used some taco seasoning mix here that you can get out of a packet. But you could add whatever seasoning mix you like. You might use your own mixture of seasonings from out of the kitchen rather than getting a pre-mixed one. But this makes it very quick, easy, and convenient. Okay. And you might want to leave it so that you can see the sour cream still. And we're going to put it over in this bowl, and then you can serve this. You could make this as a sandwich filling for school lunches.
Okay.
what do you think you want to have with yours? We'll go over there, shall we? Come on over. What would you like with yours? Carrot, celery, there's cucumber, there's zucchini, baby tomatoes. What do you think? I'm going to use carrot.
Carrot.
You want carrot too? There you go. There's a nice fat carrot for you. You tell me what you think. Mmm.
Good.
It's good. Great. Well, Daniel thinks it's a winner. And I want to thank Daniel for coming on the show today. It's been great to have you. Mm-hmm. We're talking with Pam's physician today, Dr. Jim Bartley, about headaches. Dr. Bartley's a specialist in both otolaryngology and pain, so he sees a lot of people with headaches. If he rules out sinusitis, I asked him what the next most common cause of headaches is in his patients.
The sinuses are clear. One of the most common causes that I see are people who are working at a computer all day and they've got a very, very poor posture. And I don't know whether I can demonstrate it to you over this connection, but their heads are way forward like this and they're typing away, they're breathing rapidly in their upper chest. And when one starts palpating their neck and their shoulder muscles, you'll find that they're really sore in those neck and shoulder muscles. And in that situation, I'll be telling people to put a lumbar roll in to look at their back, help with their back posture, and to put the monitor at an eye level where they can see it and start thinking about their posture while they're actually working at the computer.
So tell us about migraines.
The interesting thing about migraine and headache is that they share a basic similar underlying cause, and that is that the nervous system is more hypersensitive to incoming signals. When there are a whole variety of migraines, but the ones that one commonly sees is that the migraine is normally on one side and that the patient does not like bright light or loud noise. Now the issue is that for you and me and for the patient normally, they don't worry about that light or that noise, but when they're having an attack, their nervous system is more hypersensitive, or the volume control of the nervous system has been turned up. So you can also see that in between attacks on a migraine patient, in that if you start palpating their neck and the shoulder muscles, you'll find that their neck and shoulder muscles are very tight. So when I come to treating migraine patients, I try to look at ways that I can turn their nervous system down.
Dr. Bartley, we're talking about tension headaches. Are they the same as migraines? Are they different, or are they just on the same spectrum, that migraines are severe and tension headaches are much less severe, but the same thing?
Tension headache and migraine are part of a similar group of pain issues. Once again, in tension headache, you can show that these patients usually have very tight and sore neck and shoulder muscles. You can show that the severity of the headache relates to the tightness and the tension in the neck and the shoulder muscles. And so that's one of the reasons why they've been called tension headache. They've also been called a whole lot of other various names. People just say, oh, you're just imagining it, so they've been called psychogenic headaches. And one of the things when you do see a patient and you start examining them and start, you can actually predict where they're almost going to be sore before you palpate. And the patient for the first time is really very happy because you're actually saying that you can find physical findings wrong with them that a lot of other people haven't. So once again, when you're coming to tension headache, when you're coming to treat it, you're trying to look at ways of turning the whole nervous system down again.
And we'll get to the causes shortly. Now, some women get headaches in concert with their menstrual cycle and or their hormonal cycle. What's going on there?
That menstrual migraine can be extraordinarily difficult. What you can show is that the hormones, as they are changing during the menstrual cycle, also influence the sensitivity of the brain. So once again, the volume control of the brain is changing. You can show that progesterone changes the way that the brain perceives the information. So one's looking at ways to try and influence the hormonal fluctuations, and there are a variety of ways that you can do that. The other way that some people do is they'll actually get you to take anti-inflammatories as you're going into menstruation, when it's most common to get a menstrual headache or menstrual migraine.
Okay. Now, headaches are also common following injuries like, say, a concussive injury, whiplash, or some other head trauma, aren't they?
One sees that very commonly after head trauma. One of the ones that I will often see is a whiplash injury. And what happens with a whiplash injury is that the neck is suffers injury, and with that, the muscles get torn and stretched. And once again, if you actually examine the whiplash injury patients, they will be very sore in their neck and their shoulder muscles. But if you also examine them elsewhere in their body, even down in their legs and their feet, very often they're very tight and sore down there. And the explanation for that at the moment is that the injury and the pain in the neck and the shoulders has changed the volume control in the brain again, so that they're feeling pain elsewhere in their body because of the neck injury.
Now, when you see someone, you find it helpful for them to keep a headache diary. What do you ask your patients to record on their headache diary?
But if they are going to keep a headache diary, I ask them to try and keep it daily and to try and rate the severity of their headache. Because one of the things I would love to be able to turn around to my patients and say, have this operation or take a pill and all your headaches will go. But it actually tells us whether or not some of the interventions that we're actually doing are actually helping our patient. Are we getting a reduction in the severity and the frequency of the headaches? And also just keeping a diary by itself has been shown to help patients with their headaches and reduce the frequency and intensity of their headaches.
On the other side of the break, we'll show you how to treat headaches and find out what tests should be done. But before that, think about this. In the book of Psalms, chapter 25 and verse 18, the psalmist prays, saying, "Look on my affliction and my pain and forgive all of my sins." Now, we know that not all disease and pain is the result of sin. So what is the psalmist saying? If you've ever experienced severe pain or distress, you'll be aware that when the pain and distress becomes intense, there's a tendency to search yourself to find out what you've done to bring it on. This can be helpful because you may recognize the results of poor lifestyle choices and be compelled to make better ones. However, the psalmist came to a different conclusion and prayed that his sins be forgiven. So can guilt cause both psychological and physical pain and distress? Absolutely. For example, people with high levels of mental stress are twice as likely to experience migraines. So maybe it's not what you are eating, but what is eating you? Do you know, it needn't be that way because God specializes in forgiveness and mercy. He doesn't make you work to pay for it. It's free and immediate, like pressing delete, boom, your sins are gone. So what's preventing you? Ask God right now to forgive you. For many conditions, including headache, there's no treatment as simple yet as effective as hydrotherapy. Watch this. We're going to do some hydrotherapy now, or water treatment. So joining us is Daniel McKibben, massage therapist and hydrotherapist, and my young friend Daniel. So Daniel, what treatment are we going to do right now?
We're going to do a hot foot bath, and it's indicated in a lot of different problems.
A hot foot bath. All right, that's pretty self-explanatory. When would we use a hot foot bath?
We would use a hot foot bath for congestion in the head, in the lungs, in the pelvis, and it pulls that congestion down and will
help. So if they've got pooling of blood, congestion, like with asthma,
yes,
coughs, colds, tummy problems, pelvic problems.
Headaches.
Right. Headaches,
yes.
Okay.
Anything like that.
All of those things. So tell us, what are we going to do?
Well, what we're going to do is we've got a hot jug of water here. And Daniel, I'm just going to have you put your feet right in there. And I already checked with Daniel's motor to make sure he wasn't diabetic or anything like that.
Right, and so you want to be sure that you don't... Is it too hot in there?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
Okay, let's see how hot it... Oh, yes, it is quite hot, isn't it? So let's just put a little cool water in there, and this is good for our filming here. Sorry, I didn't mean to put that on his feet. Now we just cool it down until our patient can tolerate it. More?
Just all.
So you want to get the water to a temperature that's comfortable for your patient to start with. And once that's comfortable and they're able to actually submerge their feet comfortably, and remember the hands can tolerate a lot more temperature than the feet can. And so what can feel comfortable to the hands is going to feel very hot to the feet, which is what has happened here. And so we cool it down first so that Daniel's able to really put his feet in there. How's that feeling now?
Hot.
Still hot.
Okay, is it it's too
not,
hot?
No, okay. It's just
too hot.
So we want to have your feet all the way down, and the further up the ankle the water goes, the better it is. And so we put them in there for about 20, 25 minutes.
All right. So what we've done is we've put the feet in hot water. That's actually going to do what for the congestive problems?
It's going to loosen up that congestion. So let's say he had a sinus condition or a headache. So what we're doing is pulling that blood down out of the head.
To the feet.
To the feet. And so that'll clear it up. And oftentimes, like in the hay fever season, this is beautiful for relieving hay fever. I've used it many times on myself. And so it'll really relieve that congestion.
Mm. So any cause, infection or allergies or all of those things. And so I can see that Daniel's feet are starting to go a little bit pink. And that tells us that the circulation is starting to shift. So coming down to the feet. So how long will we stay in the hot phase of this treatment?
You stay in a minimum of 20 minutes, and you can go up to 30 or 40 minutes, but 20 to 30 minutes is normally what we do. And because of our short time, I'm not going to be able to show everything, but or I'm not going to show the heating up because Daniel's already hot, right? And I can't add any more hot water, can I? Because But
all
what
right.
happens...
Well, just pretend that the cold jug is boiling hot water. So
okay.
As the heat kind of dissipates out off the surface of this hot, say in 5 minutes' time, Daniel, would you mind... Young man, just move your feet across there. Stay in the water. It's very important.
And so this is the hot, boiling hot jug here, and I just very carefully put it in and stir the water so I don't burn Daniel's feet. And so I ask Daniel, is that enough? And you say, is that enough? Is it too hot or too cold? How is it?
It's good.
Just right?
It's comfortable now?
Okay. Good.
All right. So you must, the therapist must keep their hand between the patient's foot and the boiling water as it comes in. It's very, very important. And there are two conditions that you would definitely not want to use a hot foot bath, and that is if you have poor circulation to your feet. For example, if you have heart disease, you've had strokes, there could be poor circulation to your feet. You definitely do not want to use this. And then the other is diabetes, because often there's a circulation problem with diabetes also. And I think you've seen someone use this and cause some very serious damage to
their feet. Exactly right. I had a patient that was a diabetic, came to us, and he had burned his feet quite bad. And a third contraindication is a lack of feeling.
That's right. So someone who's had a stroke, they may not have good feeling in their feet or another reason.
That's right. And so what we want to do now is that Daniel's going to start sweating probably. Do you feel hot and sweaty, Daniel?
I guess.
Probably not yet. And so through the treatment, maybe 10 minutes into it, he'll start feeling hot and sweaty. We're going to put the cold cloth on his forehead and maybe rake it across his face like this. That feels really good usually. And then just keep that head cool. We don't want the brain heating up, causing headache, or causing him to pass out.
Yes, and if we've got congestion up here, this can really help to drive that congestion away by putting the cold.
That's exactly right. So you've got cold there and heat here, so we're just drawing that way down there.
And then I notice you've got some water there for him to drink, because when you're using water on the outside, you definitely want to put some water on the inside, because a lot of these hydrotherapy treatments involve your patient sweating. And so, and it's really important when you're ill to keep your hydration up. Definitely don't want to risk dehydration.
And that's another indication of the hot foot bath. It can help you sweat and detoxify as well, even relaxes the body. So it's a very good treatment. How are you feeling, Daniel?
Hot.
Hot.
You're feeling
all over?
Hot.
Or just your feet are hot or all over?
Mostly my feet, but I'm hot all over, basically.
Okay. So you can see a little bit of redness here in his face, and that's really a good indication there.
Well, thank you so much for enduring our hot foot bath today.
We better show them how to finish the hot foot
bath. Oh, we need to finish? You mean this is not how it ends?
It's not ended yet.
Okay.
And it's very important that we finish it the right way. And so just put your feet out of the water.
Oh, look at those red feet.
You can see the end right there. We take ice cold water. I'm very sorry, Daniel. And we are going to pour ice cold water over that for about 10 to 15 seconds.
How does it feel?
Cold.
All right. And then once that's finished, we can dry his feet off and make sure we go between his toes, drying that off as well.
Thank you.
All right. And look at that. Isn't that wonderful?
Bright pink feet. And then you'll want him to put socks on, keep those feet nice and warm.
And then he needs to rest for a minimum of 30 minutes. That'll help the treatment to really be empowered.
Great. Thank you so much, my Daniels.
You're very welcome.
A vegetarian diet can improve your waistline. Can it improve your mood and make you happier? A study of 138 Adventists found that the answer is yes. The individuals following a vegetarian diet had more than 50% less depression and anxiety than the non-vegetarians. And when asked about their general moods, the vegetarians were happier. Less than 1% had mood changes that left them unhappy. Their diet made a difference. A vegetarian diet is linked to happiness and is another ageless advantage.
And now for your questions. Someone called and said, I have a sinus infection, but what causes the yellow particles when I cough? Well, sinuses are actually air cavities around the nose which are lined with mucous membranes. So they have a small amount of mucus production that keeps them moist and healthy. However, they can become inflamed with allergies, nasal problems, and some diseases. They can also get infected with bacteria or with viral illnesses, and that causes extra drainage of discolored mucus, which can be seen when you blow your nose or dripping down the back of your throat when you cough. Now, sinusitis can be acute, subacute, chronic, or recurrent. But treatments include a hot foot bath, which we showed you earlier, decongestants, pain relievers, and of course, if it's bacterial, then antibiotics. You can apply heat to the sinuses. You can wash out the nose with saline or use nasal sprays, or you can use a vaporizer. So I hope that helps. Marcel from Manitoba, Canada says, my wife has passed away now, but she had flaky skin. Did I do the right thing in building up her immune system with juicing and good healthy food? Well, Marcel, I'm so sorry to hear about your loss, but I want to assure you that you did do the right thing in giving your wife the best nutrition you could get. I'm sure it helped her to keep going as long as she did. Someone else called and said, I have three silver amalgam fillings. Is it necessary to have them removed? Well, unless they're causing you trouble, don't remove them. But if you have a serious health issue, then that's another story. Now, when the three you have wear out and they need to be replaced, just be sure to avoid having mercury exposure during the removal process and make sure they're not replaced by silver amalgams. Well, thanks for those questions. Remember, you can phone, email, text, or Facebook those questions to me. Now, it's time to go shopping. Did you know the banana plant is the world's largest herb? Well, in my opinion, it's the yummiest too. Growing in the tropics where sanitation is often lacking, eating a sweet yellow banana is safe and easy. Untouched by human hands, you just peel and eat. Another popular banana variety is the plantain, which is very high in starch and so requires cooking. Each banana contains 3 grams of fiber, some magnesium, copper, vitamin B6, and vitamin C. With 400 milligrams of potassium and sterols, which can block absorption of cholesterol, there's a bonus for cardiovascular health. One medium banana contains over 100 calories. So diabetics, beware. As a banana ripens, its starch is converted into fructose, but there's a simultaneous increase in water-soluble pectin, which in turn limits the glycemic load. More evidence of our creator giving us sweets and keeping them healthy. Bon appetit. Today's guest, Dr. Jim Bartley, has written a really practical book called Healing Headaches, which explains the process of pain along with treatments, including breathing, lifestyle, food triggers, herbs and supplements, along with complementary and evolving therapies. I asked him to explain what tests he does for headaches.
In particular, the ones that I will often pick up are headaches that are made worse with coughing and sneezing. Then we will look at doing MRI scans or something like that. I then have a look at blood tests, and usually by the time one sees a patient in a hospital situation, a lot of blood tests have been done. And in particular, what I will be looking for is I will be looking at the patient's iron levels. Are we looking at patient's vitamin B12 levels? Are we looking at vitamin D levels if someone's got a very dark skin? And I'll also be looking at thyroid function. Usually by the time I've seen a patient, they've usually had a ESR done or C-reactive protein, looking to exclude any inflammatory causes. It's important to think about temporal arthritis in an older age group. And every now and then, if I'm very suspicious, I will be doing celiac serology, because all of those deficiencies have been associated with tension headache.
Now, you mentioned breathing as being important. Why is breathing important for managing headaches?
Well, quite often, headaches and migraine are related to stressful events. And when you're stressed, one tends to hyperventilate and you tend to breathe rapidly in your upper chest. And if you breathe rapidly in your upper chest, you start changing the blood flow to the brain. And at the same time, you also make all the neck and shoulder muscles tight and sore. So working on a relaxed diaphragmatic breathing pattern can be very useful in headache management. And the American Academy of Neurology specifically states that relaxation techniques are extremely useful in migraine management.
Now, is there an interaction, we're thinking about relaxation, is there a clear interaction between stress levels and headaches, or emotional problems and headaches, and if so, how best to manage that?
It's going to vary from patient to patient, but there are certainly patients where their emotions and stress brings on their headaches. And one of the ways that we've briefly mentioned is looking at your breathing techniques. One of the techniques that is taught by the psychologists is a technique called cognitive behavioral therapy. And the best way to think of this is that if you think of a lemon or an onion, you'll get some saliva in your mouth. So the way you think can actually influence your body's reactions. So if you start thinking, oh no, I've got this dreadful headache again, then it's possibly going to make your headache worse. But if you start using thoughts, well look, it's only temporary, it's going to pass, well, then that may be useful in managing your headaches. I don't specifically teach the techniques, but certainly the psychologists teach them, and they are pretty positive about how useful they can be in some patients. And once again, when I worked in a multidisciplinary pain clinic, I would send some patients off for cognitive behavioral therapy, and just from the approach of relaxation and from the approach of the way you dealt with your headaches, there were some patients who would get better. And I, as a surgeon, was most surprised to see these results.
Now, thinking about relaxation, it makes me also think about sleep. How important is sleep, good sleep quality, quantity of sleep, when we sleep, in terms of managing headaches?
Good quality sleep is unbelievably important. Now, I had a patient about 4 weeks ago, and she was a nurse doing night shift, and her migraines were out of control. And I basically looked at her and said, you've got to stop your night shift. And as soon as she stopped doing her night shift, her migraines and her headaches got dramatically better. I won't say at this stage they're cured, but I saw her only a week ago, and she was just saying, woof, that's made an enormous difference. So there are a whole lot of ways that one can look at trying to help with sleep, and part of it is to be in a dark room, going to bed at a regular time. There are sometimes taking various substances, I won't go into it, but say sometimes taking milk, which has got tryptophan in it, can be useful, but other times milk might be no good for headaches. So trying to actually sleep and develop a good sleep pattern can be very useful. There are some medications around which I have used with patients. Kava, which is a traditional Fijian drink, can be very useful at relaxing people and helping them go to sleep. I have tried melatonin. I haven't found that all that much use, maybe in some older patients, but those are other more natural ways that one can look at trying to develop good sleep patterns.
And then how about physical activity? Because I know that will obviously also affect good quality, will tend to towards good quality sleep, but does exercise have, or physical activity have, an impact on headaches?
Yes, you can show that if people have got a good exercise program going, that can make a big difference to their headaches. And so just trying to pay some attention to your physical fitness can make a big difference. I think if you're going to embark on an exercise program, you need to discuss it with someone who knows what they're doing, because there are a whole lot of potential exercise programs out there that are advocated, but certainly some exercise 3 or 4 times a day is good. You have to be careful not to exercise before you go to sleep, because if you've been exercising a couple of hours before you go to sleep, all your stress hormones are out there, and that can of course impact on your sleep quality. So think about a gentle exercise program to start off with as being useful for your headaches. Also, if you're outside and getting some light going into your eyes, that can also help set your circadian cycle, and that will also help the natural production of melatonin, which can also be helpful developing good sleep quality.
After the break, Dr. Bartley will talk about the various treatments for headaches, so stay with us. Pam's migraines invaded her life, impairing her ability to function as wife, mother, and counsellor. She was desperate to find a solution and went to many different practitioners. Finally, after 12 months on his waiting list, she got in to see Dr. Bartley, who took one look at her and made an immediate diagnosis, but not one she wanted to hear.
The catalyst for change for me was my headaches were becoming more and more, and I went and saw a naturopath. That was my first sort of introduction to working with natural health professionals, and she sort of, and part of her checkup with me and checking things out, she wanted me to keep a health diary. And it wasn't until I started documenting the headaches and when I was having them that I realised how many I was having. He was the most fascinating man, really. Yeah. So he sort of said to me, you go home and you take gluten out of your diet, and you go and see the breathing physio and learn how to breathe properly, and then you come back and see me. Yeah, so I was quite resistant to sort of taking gluten out of my diet, but decided that I really did have to just give it my best shot. I think now I have the best of both worlds. I have, I can still access the medical model if I want to, but my GP works more on the holistic side. Yeah.
Bringing together the best of both worlds was what Dr. Bartley did for Pam. I asked him to share what foods commonly trigger headaches and migraines.
Well, there are some people who will definitely notice that soon after they've had foods that their headaches will get worse. Common foods in that situation are chocolate and additives such as MSG in Chinese restaurants. And usually by the time you've seen a patient in the clinic, if the headache comes on instantaneously after they've had the food or the first few hours, the patient has done their detective work and decided that that food is a bit dangerous for them. There is a large literature indicating that the elimination of certain foods from the diet can be useful. And the two or three foods that seem to have a link with migraine are wheat, milk, and I'm told in the States corn, and I have really seen eggs. So after they've been on this elimination diet, there'll be some patients who will find that they can have a little bit, but if they have too much, they have problems. But at least they've also identified that these foods can be a factor in their tension headaches and their migraines.
Are there any herbs or supplements that you recommend for people with headaches?
There are a number of supplements which can be useful. Most of the evidence relates to, for their use when it comes to migraine. You can show that magnesium supplementation is useful, vitamin B2 supplementation is useful, and expensive, but coenzyme Q10 as a supplement can also be useful in migraine. The supplement dose depends on who you're talking it over with, and I suggest they discuss it with someone at the health food shop or at the chemist. Those supplements have all been approved by the American Academy of Neurology again as being useful in the prevention of migraine. The American Academy also recommends that it's worthwhile trialling two herbs, butterbur and feverfew.
Now, you mentioned right at the beginning of the show that posture is important. Give us a few tips about posture for prevention of headaches.
Well, one of the first things to do with posture is actually to think about your low back and to make sure you've got a nice curve in your low back as you're sitting. The other thing to do when you're thinking about your posture is to think about where you're breathing. Are you breathing into your tummy button, or are you breathing in your upper chest? As soon as you start breathing in your upper chest, you're going to start bringing your shoulders forward and your head forward.
You've talked a lot about upper shoulder and neck muscles. Is massage or chiropractic adjustment helpful?
And certainly manipulation and massage can be useful in the management of headache.
Finally, let's talk about medications. What medications can be helpful for these problems?
Certainly, there are a number of medications out there that can be extremely useful. I use Maxalt quite a bit, which is a wafer, which can be useful in the prevention of headaches. Sinoptitran can also be highly effective in the treatment of acute migraine. One of the difficulties is that you can only use it maximally up to two times a week. If you start using it longer than that, then you can develop problems with what's called a medication overuse headache. And there are other medications such as beta blockers, amitriptyline, nortriptyline. All of these can be very useful. So there are a range of medications and other options out there for difficult migraine patients.
And a big thank you to Dr. Bartley for being on today's show. Remember, tension and heightened sensitivity in the brain from whiplash and head trauma, poor posture and breathing, or stress will trigger headaches and migraines. So relax, correct your posture, get a massage, and if you don't know how to breathe properly, then buy Dr. Bartley's book, Healing Headaches, or see a physical therapist. Be sure your thyroid is working well and that you're getting enough iron, magnesium, vitamin B2 and vitamin D, and consider supplementing with CoQ10. And if you don't have diabetes or nerve damage in your feet, then do a hot foot bath for that headache. You can also try some of the new devices using TENS, TMS or optical nerve stimulation. Keep a headache diary and practice cognitive behavioural therapy. And of course, there are a host of medications that you can discuss with your doctor. That's all from me today. Thanks for joining us on Go Healthy for Good. I'll see you next time.